Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Winchester Radio today. This evening, we're going to be talking about the King of the Damned in 21st episode of my season, just a couple left after this one. This episode was directed by P.J. Pesci, who I think did a really good job, except for one thing I'll talk about later, and written by Eugenie Ross Lemming and Brad Buckner. And I thought overall it was a very good episode, and I must be a sign of the apocalypse because I don't usually care for Eugenie and Brad's writing. So I was very excited to see that. I thought overall this is a very good episode. So it could have the advantage of coming on the heels of Bloodlines, be back for a pilot from last week, and pretty much, you know, an episode that my cat wrote might have looked better, you know, the following week. But I actually do think this was a really good episode.
I want to say, since I had to miss last week because I was at DC Con and I didn't get to, I unfortunately did not get to talk about Bloodlines with everybody. Tragic. But I will say
you're the lucky one.
Know, I will say that this is now that it hasn't gotten picked up, I want to say, you know, I'm sorry to everybody who worked really hard on it because, you know, a lot of time, money, and effort was put into creating this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel bad for the potential cast that, well, you know, y'all don't have a job now. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But as far as the show itself or the potential for the show itself, I have to say I'm not surprised that it didn't get picked up. And there was not one person I talked to at DC Con who had a positive statement about the show, aside from Jerry Wanick made it pretty.
Yeah, which is
that was it. And
yeah.
Like we were saying, personally for me the makeup was great. So, but yeah, that was the best statement that almost everybody has.
I have to say, as much as everybody disliked the episode, including myself, I thought it did have a lot of potential. And if sometime in season 10, Sam and Dean don't go to Chicago to clear out those monster families, that's wrong.
I was thinking about that. Like, they're going to let it lie. Like, you can't have that.
I
will say this is the first con that I've ever been to or watched videos of that occurred after an episode aired, and nobody talked about the episode.
Oh.
You know, you usually get, you know, y'all see the episode, y'all like the episode, and we didn't do that. And I found that quite telling. So there's that.
Well, it sounds like it was a pretty across-the-board okay decision then for it to not carry forward, possibly even with cast and crew.
Because I will say this, you know, we here on the podcast and, you know, in general as a fandom are quite fond of Andrew Dobbs' work. This didn't feel like Andrew Dobbs' writing. It just didn't.
Mm. It did not.
So, didn't feel like what we've come to identify as his writing. And so there's that. I said all that to say this. I am probably the lone on the podcast, and possibly in the entirety of fandom, who doesn't feel at best about Buckner Lemming. I actually, on the whole, enjoy most of their episodes. And while, you know, the argument can be made that a racist truck episode is not the best in our canon narrative, but, you know, everybody has a clunker. And I also defended Man's Best Friends with Benefits, so there's that. But, you know, I think I have a feeling that in retrospect, their episodes are going to probably be some of the most important ones as far as the arc goes from season 7-ish to the end.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. I said it. I said it.
And now it's recorded for all posterity.
I've already said on my personal Twitter, I have the running joke on my personal Twitter is hashtag taxi driver is important. And everyone's like, here, so yeah, no. And I'm like, just wait.
Well,
I think this episode kind of reinforced the taxi driver is important thing, because in Taxi Driver, we found out about the back door to purgatory and the back door to hell when it's in the back door to purgatory. And then in this episode, we found out, woohoo, there's a back door to heaven as well. So
exactly.
Yes,
It's all going to come together. And like a friend of mine, Linda Bookdoll on Twitter, we did a Buckner Lemming rewatch, if anybody saw that. And so we watched only Buckner Lemming episodes, aside from we took out Matt as Friends with Benefits. And if you watch their episodes, it's like a show inside of a show. It's kind of freaky. So social experiment. Go do that, guys.
Mm-hmm.
So I came into this episode with oddly high expectations. Everyone else was like, oh, gosh, let's see. And I was like, no, this is going to be fantastic. Wait. Just wait, guys. And feel free to send all your cards and gifts to me, because I was right.
Totally surprised. I mean, with them, I don't have any expectations. I mean, I don't plan on hating the episode, because that doesn't make any sense, because why hate something I haven't seen, which, you know, unfortunately is sometimes the rule in many fandoms, not just Supernatural, where it's, you know, you hear one word or one phrase and you're like, that's it, I hate it already. And I'm like, well, you haven't seen it, so you can at least give it a try. And you could still hate it, and that's fine. So with them, I'm hopeful, and I don't have a lot of expectations. This was a very pleasant surprise. And there are other episodes. Sometimes there are some really great moments in it. Like for me, they don't always tie things together, or they just change things without preparation or warning. So sometimes that bothers me. But sometimes their episodes are full of really good moments, but they don't always tie together. So maybe in the end, when everything is done, and like I said, if you just do a Brad and Eugenie rewatch, it'll just be this incredible story all by itself. Together. And never mind all those other episodes in between.
Well, and I say that because, you know, just experimentally, if you watch episode 807, which is them, and then, of course, 819. And if you watch them without anything in between, they're actually seamless.
Hmm.
You don't need the 12 episodes in between. They they read like an episode that follows the episode. So freaky. So,
interesting.
Again.
I wonder if they broke them together.
All their episodes from that point all tie together in a really weird way, in a way that no other writers' episodes do. So
I wonder, because I don't know, they don't, maybe sometimes, you know, they all sort of pitch things together and say, okay, that's a great element, but let's use it later on. Well, it was present at the first pitch, but it wasn't going to be used until the second one, which is possible. I don't know. I mean, we're closing in on the summer break, till latest. So I don't know if you guys are game. Maybe over the summer for fun, we'll pick a couple of their episodes and just watch them together and then do a commentary. If we're up for that, maybe not.
We'll have to see, if it's a doable thing. I do want to, going back to, or being specifically in this episode, I want to kind of bring up something that Jim Michaels pointed out that I didn't notice in the episode, which is a good thing, I suppose, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But he made it a point during casting to have someone who is in a wheelchair in the background. And it was a promise that he had made to somebody. And it was done to highlight that people with physical struggles still go out and have fun. They still go out and party with their friends. It's not like they don't lead, like people don't lead separate kinds of lives because of ailments or disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the fact that he put that attention to detail, not only that someone brought it to his attention, but that he remembered it and implemented it. I mean, Lord knows, we already love Jim Michaels desperately on this podcast. He's like one of our
mm-hmm.
favorite human beings. But it was still, you know, extra love for Jim Michaels on top of the love cherry on a love sundae, which is probably a lot dirtier sounding than I meant, but whatever.
Well,
you'd
be more worried
Jim.
If it was for Russ Hamilton you were making that comment, but I think Jim will take it for face value. Fucking dessert. That was a pretty cool thing. I saw his tweets, and that was pretty awesome. There's a lot going on in this episode.
I have to comment really quick before I forget about it, because I'm watching the episode as we're talking, and this scene where the angel has brought the angel guy from the bar to Castiel's new compound, and you can't tell if they're talking about Metatron or Castiel, and then you hear these slow footsteps coming down the hall. It's like, of course, you know, we knew it was going to be Castiel, but it's like, since when, you know, does Castiel walk so slowly? I was, when he showed up, I'm like, what are you doing just shuffling down the hall?
Maybe even though it's shorter, the new trench coat, or not really even trench coat, maybe it weighs more. We don't know.
Could be. But I was like, I will say that slow.
comparatively, I'm not a fan of this coat versus the other coat. The other coat was all kinds of sexy. This coat is all kinds of bulky.
Yeah. I much prefer the original coat.
Since Stanley will say, you know, congratulations to Misha Collins for the announcement on his regular status for season 10.
Right.
Takes a little bit of the suspense out of the end of season 9, but, you know, it was
right,
not that anybody
right.
thought he wouldn't be in season 10, because I don't know anybody who seriously thought that.
Misha's best, but is Castiel?
He did say
he did say
something at DCCon, which was, in my opinion, a pretty gigantic spoiler. I won't say it here because in case people are watching and don't want to hear the spoiler. If you don't want to hear the spoiler prior to the finale airing, I'm not saying that people recorded video art creation entertainment DCCon, but if somebody happened to have done so, and if it happens to end up on YouTube, just be warned that Misha does drop a fairly large spoiler in his Saturday solo panel. I'm just saying.
Okay.
So I suspect based on his spoiler that at least when we first see him in season 10, he will still be Castiel. Beyond that, not sure, and I have no basis for being unsure about it. I have no actual speculation, but for at least the first time we see him, he will be Castiel. He will be Angel Castiel, I will say.
Guess we'll find out. I think I'll skip the video and just wait and be surprised.
I mean, yeah, it was one of those where everyone kind of went, did he actually just say that like it's nothing? Like, he just says for blase, and I'm like, dude, that's like your whole story. Like, thanks, bro.
Oops.
No need to
Misha
watch that.
Misha was probably thinking, probably didn't realize that we hadn't seen it yet. You know, like, well,
the question was specifically about the finale, and he was like, this, and we were like, what?
What?
So, yeah. But anyway, so So going back to my point of saying that, hopefully wardrobe will get him a new coat because I just don't like this one. I don't.
Yeah, it's a little too short. It's like
maybe too short. And the material doesn't lay the same way. It doesn't have the same kind of fall to it. And so specifically, as far as television, it doesn't read the same way on screen as the previous one did. It doesn't have a flowing movement that, I don't know, maybe it's on purpose because for Cass, it was always kind of almost like a metaphor for his wings. And maybe it's on purpose because he can't fly anymore. So maybe it's on purpose. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I hadn't thought about that because it just doesn't have the same kind of movement and
yeah. It's like Dean is forever in search of the right jacket. It's like ever since the original John leather jacket, unfortunately the real one was stolen, but Dean hasn't had it. It's like, you know, this one, it's like Goldilocks and the three leather jackets. You know, it's like this one's
the out of purgatory
color,
too tight.
You know, too tight. And, you know, this one's too bright. This one's too whatever. So he can't seem to settle on a jacket.
I think this week's was too suede.
It was too suede and pretty bright. Like, blood's going to show like mad on that jacket.
it's one of those things that just doesn't read on camera quite as well. He was the same color as Cass's office walls, and it was a little strange.
That's odd. This episode had the longest Ben sequence ever. It was like
an
entire episode all by itself. And not that I minded because I love everything in it, but it took forever. And I'm like, is there an episode coming?
And I think because this is an episode, I mean, we watch, as a fandom, we watch a lot, and we watch very analytically, and we remember all kinds of things. But I think that for casual viewers, because Buckner and Lemming really pulled up a lot of canon and lore, and that they had to make sure that a casual viewer knew what the heck was going on and who are you talking about.
Yeah,
because
there
was a potential to get really lost with this episode because it did pull up so many things from so far back, which was fantastic. I was literally rolling around in the cannon.
Oh, Poughkeepsie.
When they showed the Hellhounds and the then, I was like, whoa, Hellhounds. And then not only just Hellhounds, but they had the scene from, from season two when we first heard about the Hellhounds, Robert Johnson and everything, Crossroad Blues. And so I was like, wow, it's pretty cool. And I didn't know there were going to be Hellhounds in this episode. Although I still don't know what the purpose of the Hellhound was in that scene. I liked it.
Mm.
I really liked that scene. And I liked getting to, Crowley, talking to it and calling her Juliet. And the scene seeing Crowley and Gavin, just listening to music and reading newspapers, very cavalier. I like that. But I still don't what the point was with the Hellhound.
Season 8 was important. Not just Taxi Driver. Season 8 was important. Just going to say it.
So there is a purpose to the Hellhound in your theory.
I have, yes.
Okay. I mean, it was related to Crowley talking the Hellhound down.
Yeah, I don't want to jinx it because if I'm wrong, there are about 5 people in the world who know the theory that I have that I'm brewing with some other people. And if we're wrong, people might be really sad. And so I don't want to do that.
You will have to explain to me the Hellhound part of it later. So.
Yes. But I did. I also just like, even if it's not something that's important, it's just the continuity of King of Hell has Hellhounds. He has, and this is who he can trust. He cannot trust other demons. Crowley can't trust anybody right now. So he can trust his dogs. And you can always trust your dog.
Mm-hmm.
And I really thought that was, I thought it, just the implication of that is really, really cool because
who else does Crowley have? You know, you've got a whole boardroom of betrayers in this episode, you know, and in Blade Runners, he was betrayed, and he's just constantly being betrayed by those in his charge.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And the whole, you know, no one's been tortured like in the history of torture that you've been tortured like I'm going to torture you. I think I've left out a couple tortures, but
yeah.
It was a lot of torture.
Yeah.
No one in the history of torture has been tortured with torture the way I'm going to torture you with torture. I think it was something like that. It was hilarious.
Yeah, fantastic line, fantastic delivery. The kind of delivery and the kind of line that only Mark Shepherd can do justice to.
Mm. I should say that it's just me, Becky, and Vinny tonight, so we do not have a guest, so we will be taking call-ins, and I say that sort of after the fact because there is a caller holding on the line. If you have any questions or comments, we can – do you guys want to take the call, or do you want to ask them to just hang on for just a little bit, or –
No, we can take it.
Okay. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call. I just had a question about how the last season ended with all the angels falling.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know when the episode, you know, I know that it still comes on every Tuesday, but they haven't addressed, like, when all the angels were falling. Is that the episode that's coming on the 16th?
No, you mean the episode the next episode, next week's episode, is Stairway to Heaven. That's from this season. And then the one after that is Do You Believe in Miracles, which is the season finale for this year. And then after that one airs, the following week they're going to start re-airing season 9 again. So they're not repeating season 8, it doesn't look like. They're just, through the summer, it looks like they'll be repeating season 9.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Season 9, and then season 10 will be next year.
Right.
Are we going to find out this year about the angels falling? Because the very last episode we watched was when all the, you know, when Cass was like, all the angels are falling, they look like falling stars. And then I hurried and went to 30, you know, the CW. But the episode that came on had nothing to do with what had happened, you know. So I was just, you know, just a little confused as to when we get to actually see what happens from that,
okay.
From that outcome of the angels falling.
You need to watch on May 27th. That's when CW is restarting showing season 9. So if you watch
okay.
May 27th episode, that's the first episode of this season. That's the first episode after the Angels of Fell.
Okay, so May 27th on the CW
right.
network, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Well, you have answered all my questions. I see you on my Facebook, and I like to interact. It's something my son, he's 18, and he has autism. And every morning and every night, we watch that together. So I told him I would try to find out, and you just did help me out. So we're going to watch the whole new season, which I've seen them all probably like 10 times, and I still don't get sick of them. So I am definitely going to watch, and then that will help me, I'm sure.
Great. I'm glad we helped you.
So that was it. I will let you take your other call now. I thank you much. I think you guys are doing great. We love this show, and I just can't thank you enough.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. You have a wonderful weekend, okay?
You too.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I'm glad she asked that question because over on our Facebook page, there was a lot of confusion about the episodes and how they're airing and everything. So I'm glad she asked that. So I hope we clarified it for everybody.
Yeah, and I was like, wow, you've missed 9th season. But, you know, she's probably going to be one of, like, the only happy people for Helatus because
she's
seeing the season for the first time. So, yeah.
While everybody else is having, like, random seizures in a corner, she's going to be like, this is fantastic.
Yeah, wow.
Oh, I love that.
Who's this Gadriel guy?
I'm legitimately jealous in this moment. Legitimately jealous.
It's like all brand new. That's awesome. And yeah. And that's said with all sincerity. I hope he knows that.
Yeah.
Totally jealous.
I'm not sarcastic. Yeah, I'm not sarcastic in the least. Because sometimes I think about that. Like I said, I have my best friend who doesn't watch the show in real time. She waits till the DVD comes out and she watches the whole season at once.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's never upset because she gets to the conclusion within 4 or 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
And so she never has the 9 month angst that the rest of us have. She's just like, why are we upset for 9 months? This is fine.
Oh, so. I don't know. Maybe she's got something there.
Right, she's onto something. I do also want to say I was really amused to have sassy, sarcastic, bitchy Winchester in this episode with their interrogation. We don't get to see them. Yeah, we don't get to see them so playfully sarcastic very often, especially in recent times.
It was the best thing ever.
Because I think the last time we saw that kind of attitude out of them, it wasn't even them, it was Leviathan them, so.
And I love that they, because we were supposed to be, they were doing the point of view of us being the guy in the chair. And I love, that they were just speaking right to the camera. And, it was just so good. And for those who are like me and was like, that guy in the chair, that angel guy, he is so familiar. He was the deputy in season 6's Frontierland, directed by Guy B. He was the deputy guy that Dean ended up putting in the jail cell, and the Phoenix guy comes to kill him. So that was the same actor.
Yeah.
Yes.
Obligatory Be My Deputy joke right in there. If you watch Buffy.
Yeah.
This thing was just so funny. I loved all of their attitude and just making fun of the guy. It was just so much fun. So, yeah.
Yeah, there was...
I loved it.
There was a little bit about that... It bothered me a little bit about that. Oh, you're a fan.
You think you know us, but
you don't. And I'm like, I mean, I get it. And we're not that kind of fan. And I'm hoping it's not a poke, but it felt like one a little bit.
Well, I took it, first of all, they mentioned Bieber specifically, and we know how much Jared likes to make fun of Justin Bieber. So I took it as a slam against their fans, because if anything, if you've ever gone to any of the conventions or, seen any of the videos that might be on YouTube that are not supposed to be there from the convention, Jared and Jensen always make a huge point of talking about how we're all a family. And how we're so close and we're there for each other. And, they make this huge point of that all the time. So I really didn't take it as a slam against us. I took it as a slam against Justin Bieber and his fans.
And I will also say that during their panel this weekend, one of the questions they got asked was, do you have, any hidden talents? And they were both like, no. And everyone was like, oh, come on, you don't have any talents? And they were like, yeah, but we don't have hidden talents. You guys know them. And so then, Jensen didn't really, I don't remember what Jensen said, and Jared had, a video game answer. He was talking about Super Smash Bros. And how he's just, completely awesome at it and bring it anybody who wants to, I will fight you. And then at the end of it, he said, and now I have no more secrets. Which, is not technically true. We don't know them. But I don't think that they would allow mockery of the fan base when they do feel and they do share so much with us that compared to other actors and celebrities who you really don't know anything about at all, we do know a degree about them. And so I don't think that for them, I don't think they even equated it. I think it was like, you know, we're talking about those kind of fans, not our fans. Our fans. They, it's a very separate thing. And they were also asked, like, you know, have you had anything, like, extreme or bad happen? And they both were like, nope, we're good. And, you know, they kind of joked about Jensen getting spider monkeyed that one time. But they were, for the most part, they were like, no, we are which Jensen jokes, he's like, so, you know, that happened, so I took her home. It was cute. But, you know, in their opinion, like, in their viewpoint, you know, there have been some extreme cases, because we all know as a fandom when something happens, or we're like, ooh, over the line. But for them, it doesn't even, the percentage of that is so small that it doesn't even seem to register with them anymore. So, again, that goes back to, I don't feel like they were talking to their fans as a whole. I think they were talking about the specific kind of fan, whether it's theirs or Bieber's or anybody's, that feels like, that feels overly entitled, I should say. Not just that they know you, but that over-the-line entitlement that can occur.
Yeah, I mean, I tweaked to it, but I thought, you know, this would go against pretty much everything we've heard and read and seen for years about Jensen and Jared and everybody right on through the Supernatural cast and crew. So, it sounds like, you know, of course that you're right, that it's just, it's not us, it's those kinds of fans, and I think every fandom has them, but for us, they're probably in a minority. So
I mean, and then there's, you know, there's a difference between, every generation has them. You know, you have the Beatles, people who are big fans, casual fans, and then you have, you know, collapsing and sacrificing themselves on the altar of Beatlemania, and then you know, you fast forward 30 years, and you have NSYNC and Backstreet Boys, and then you fast forward 15 years and you have One Direction fans. You know, it's a cycle. It's a cycle. It always goes through a cycle. And
well, there's a lot of course, well, not a lot, but there's definitely some back and forth between, you know, Sam Girl, Beam Girl, and versus the two. And, you know, that's been going on a long time, because, you know, I was a original Star Wars fan, and there were huge arguments between, they called it the Church of Ford and Chapel of Luke, you know, the Church of Han and the Chapel of Luke, between, you know, Han Solo and Luke Skywalker. So,
In Buffy fandom, were you an Angel Girl or a Spike Girl? And it was like, but Angel has his own show. Irrelevant, are you a Spike Girl or an Angel Girl? Choose your side, stand your ground.
Yeah, and I say they're fictional. Why choose?
I mean, you know,
oil them up, put them, you know, have them wrestle. That would be good. So
I love that idea. So, at the risk of sounding completely shallow, can we apply that to the whole Sam Girl, Dean Girl fight? Because I think for scientific purposes, this is something we should look into for season 10.
For science.
For science and for puppies. But, you know, it would solve so many, it would solve
Yeah,
nothing,
it would.
But,
let's just go.
Well, you know, and canonically, we've never really seen, aside from the pilot, we've never seen Sam and Dean spar with each other, which I think is really interesting, because they have to spar in order to stay in shape. And so, again, there could be oil involved.
I know. It's like they look in shape, but we never really see them working out very often. I mean, we saw Sam run a couple times. We saw him do pull-ups when he was soulless Sam. And then
we never see
Dean work out. Yes, we did.
No, and the implication is that Dean would rather put on a DVD of some chick working out and that can call that his exercise. But
yeah, so yeah,
arms beg to differ.
Yes, I could see them sparring for sure. I mean, that just doesn't magically happen. So, you know, they don't exactly join a gym in every town they go in.
Yeah, but the point is that I didn't feel like they were talking to me. And I say that as someone who, you know, we have the website, we do the podcast. Until recently, I was doing recaps for another website. We all go to cons. We are fangirls, and we are, no joke, this is our fandom, fangirls. And I didn't sit there and feel like you're talking to me. So I think that's the dividing line, is that if you okay, I'm not going to say what I'm going to say. I'm just saying I didn't feel that way. Will you or not?
And something else about that scene, besides that, just the way it was filmed, like we were the angel being interrogated and Amandine right there looking down in your face, I actually like drew back without realizing it. It was like they're too close. You know, it's like in my face, which really shouldn't be a bad thing, but
no,
I might have leaned forward. I don't recall, but
yeah,
I suspect
like,
that I leaned forward.
I was thinking, wow, this is intimidating as Dean and Sam. But I thought it was a great angle. I thought it was a really great directing
and
choice.
I think the juxtaposition between the direction and the dialogue worked really well, because I didn't feel like they were chastising me or the angel or the viewer or whatever, however you want to interpret that. I didn't feel chastised because the dialogue was so flippant. And you could see the manipulation, and how well, what I really like is they're two brothers on the outs. Dean's going through what he's going through with the mark, and this is a very, you know, they're, according to Sam, they're not technically brothers right now, and all this going on, and yet they fell into this routine seamlessly. It was, I see what you're doing there, and I'm with you on this, you know,
And it took all of 5 seconds for Dean to catch and go. Right.
Exactly.
Along with,
and
Sam. Yeah, it was great.
For them to be in a place that they're at and yet still be so in tune. You know, we have Sam in this episode too, you know, he's really hitting the whole we're partners. We're partners, which I think is interesting, because in a way that is a different thing than just being brothers. Being partners is, you know, it's I kind of equate it right now to if you were an old school SVU fan, Benson and Stabler, where that really was a go to the mat, die for you kind of partnership, which is very similar to what Sam and Dean have right now, where despite what Sam has said, his actions are contradictory to that. I like that it shows that you can take the brother out of the partner, but you can't take the partner out of the brother.
And
I feel the last few episodes to me has felt like the whole brother not brother thing has just fallen to the wayside. They've forgotten about it, and or not really necessarily forgotten about it, but they've moved on back to their usual pattern.
I don't think so, because I felt that way. I felt that way since The Purge, where I was like, you know, you guys are far more brotherly than you've been in years for two men who are saying we're not brothers. And I think that they're doing that on purpose to show us that you can be as mad as you want, you can say hurtful things, but it doesn't actually change the core of your heart. And so Sam can be mad at Dean, and he can take the proverbial familial bond away for now, But the reality is we've seen nothing but Sam, you know, white knighting to Dean's rescue and vice versa this whole season, quite possibly more than we have seen since, like, season two.
Yeah, it's like he's,
and
it's like
I
his
do,
words
I do feel like
have
like,
not matched
yeah.
his actions. Like,
exactly,
you know.
And I do feel like that's purposeful. I think that's something that's very calculated that the writers are doing.
Yes.
That's exactly what I meant.
Yeah. Because the first time that I kind of drew back and felt that way was The Purge. And that was, you know, what, episode 10?
Yeah.
No. 12, 13? I don't know. It was a long time ago, is what I'm saying.
It was
many episodes before. It was many, many episodes ago. How many? So many.
Yeah. And it's been Sam, if he still feels angry, it's understandable, but he's set that aside. And it's not affecting him trying to save Dean, worried about him, and all of that. That is still there, but it could still be there. And according to Jensen, Lynn from Fangasm posted a little summary of Jensen meet and greet from DC Con, and he said he feels that Dean hasn't gotten over what Sam has said to him about not being brothers, and it's still there, and he has to let it go. And we saw that, because when he comes to get Sam and Sam's tied up a couple episodes, it's the Alex, Annie, et cetera episode, and Dean's like, yeah, you know, I know you wouldn't do the same for me. So he hasn't forgotten. I mean, Sam put it aside.
What I think is the most telling thing, we didn't get a chance to touch on this too much because we had the amazing Kim Rhodes on, and she's so good. But the most telling thing about that is not just that, it's that we saw Dean do something we've never seen Dean do before, is play possum and allow Sam to get hurt. For the greater purpose, which is the kind of stuff that Sola Sam pulled. You know, that collateral damage is collateral damage. And, you know, I think what Jensen has done, in my opinion, what I see on the screen is it's not so much the words or the actions that are being said, is that you can tell Jensen put himself into a specific headspace for things. And it's coming across amazingly.
Yeah.
And we did our my friend Britt and I did our sandwich photo op, and she had a great idea. She was like, I can't articulate it. So we got up and I pointed to Jensen and I said, you came. I pointed to Jared and I said, you, Gadriel, protect us. And the watching them snap into character and Jensen mind holding the blade. So it's become a muscle memory thing to him, I think. And
Which makes me very nervous.
It looks like a promo. I'm sorry. It looks like a freaking promo.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
They snapped right in, and they snapped right back out. And it was probably one of the most amazing things I've ever seen them do in 7 years of watching them do things in person. But it goes to show how seriously they take these kind of things and the choices that they make as actors, because in that moment there was no Jared Jensen and there was no Sam and Dean. And you can see that starting to bleed through as far as Jensen's playing Dean right now.
And I wanted to give big props to Elena Huffman. I mean, first of all, she is always looks amazing, but she was just phenomenally beautiful. Oh my God, her hair was so perfect.
And shout out to Sabrina and the rest of the makeup crew, because
fantastic. Oh, she was just gorgeous. And I was shocked that they killed Abaddon so fast.
I thought she would be around till the end, you know, till the finale. But I can understand why, because there's way other stories going on. But that was probably one of the coolest death scenes. I mean, the camera shot with her up in the air and Dean with the blade in her stomach. Oh, it was just so cool.
Okay, I have a question for you then. Because I keep seeing people say, like, oh, my God, I thought she'd last longer, or what a waste, blah, blah, blah. I didn't feel that way. I don't feel like anything they set up for her was anything more than what we got. So what is it that you thought she was going to do, aside from what she did?
I didn't expect her to do anything more. I just thought they would drag it out longer.
Oh, no, and I kind of... A friend of mine and I had predicted that this was going to be her Death Now episode. We were like, we were right, okay. And then I saw those people like, no, I didn't see that coming. I'm like, how did you not? I'm confused. Because I felt like it was very much set up that this was going to be it for her. Because it was, you know, when everybody's seen the whole, you know, like Team Crowley or Team Abaddon, Queen of Hell or King of Hell, for a lot of reasons, I don't think anybody was under the impression that it was going to that Abaddon was going to be standing and Crowley wasn't.
I thought, can you hear me, by the way?
Yeah, hello? You're there.
Okay. Yeah. My phone dropped the call and I had to come back in. So just want to make sure. I thought while I was watching it, I mean, I wasn't that surprised because you could kind of tell what was going on, and it had to culminate somehow. But I just was thinking as I was watching, oh, they're going to wrap up the storyline between who's going to be king or queen of hell, and that's we're going to get an answer, and now we can move on to what is the ultimate end game here for this season. Metatron, Gadriel, Mark of Cain. So I thought that was really cool. It's like let's tie something up.
Yeah, and I feel like for me it was time. Like there have been way too many threads in this season, in my opinion, for it to not start to tie up already. And you know, we tied up Bartholomew, and now we've tied up Abaddon, and we'll get to, you know, it kind of went in order of major player. And I feel like, you know, the last major player standing as far as quote-unquote villains is going to be Dean.
Yeah, I agree. The whole Mark of Cain thing is going
to
be the last
Yeah,
thing.
Although I do think that Crowley's carrying over to season 10 as well. Metatron, I'm not so sure. But Crowley, we will see Mark Shepard in season 10. I have no doubt.
Mm. And oh my God, they have to finish this Metatron story up this year. Well, I mean, I'm sorry, but I'm tired of him. He was, you know, Curtis Armstrong is freaking awesome.
Time to go.
But he was, you know, he was there last year and he's there this year. And I would like to move on to a different storyline.
Actually, and you know what? I'm going to kind of contradict myself. In that, you know, I said I'm not sure about Metatron. I kind of feel like maybe Metatron will carry over as well because I can't figure out, now that we know Amisha's going to be a regular again, I can't figure out what they'll do with the Angel line if they get rid of Metatron. What? So there, I'm not going to be surprised if Metatron carries over into season 10. I'm a little weary about everything. I'm weary and wary, as Susan and I have joked about words before. I'm both weary and wary.
Okay, yeah. I have to admit.
Weary and wary, yes. Yeah, but I agree.
I just have to say, I thought the coolest thing to come out of this episode, and I've mentioned it before, and I hope girls, this is going to turn into something huge, maybe the storyline for season 10, is the whole Gavin brought to the present before he died in the past, changing timelines. I think that is so interesting, and I think that could turn out that should be something huge because we already saw a change made in this episode because back in season 6, episode 4 in Weekend at Bobby's, we all know that Sam and Dean know of Crowley's son Gavin. Yet in this episode, they did not. You know, Crowley's like, who knew Crowley had a son? But right there,
right.
Changes already made right there.
Because if they never had to go get Gavin because the storyline, Gavin's storyline didn't occur that way, then they have no basis for knowing that.
Exactly. If Gavin did not die on that ship, then Rufus could not get that ring from the Maritime Museum for Bobby to use to get Gavin's ghost to come visit Crowley. So that stuff never happened now that Gavin is alive.
Right.
And Sam, they made a point of having Sam saying that once you change something in the past, you don't know, it causes ripples everywhere. It causes all kinds of changes. So this is could bring about so many cool stories. I'm always, I love time travel stuff anyways.
I actually don't like time travel stuff at all. Aside from Doctor Who, I'm like, no, I don't know. So I'm a little like, oh, how are you going to, am I going to care? Because I might not care. But all I could think of is in Blink, in Doctor Who, where he says, you know, would have torn a hole in the universe and destroyed 2/3 of the world, and also I'd lost my hair. I kept thinking about that, you know, is this going to be the whole of the universe? Is this going to be the 2/3? Because Lord knows how I felt about metafiction, because we talked about it. But I was talking to some people who kind of talked me down off the ledge about metafiction, and she's telling me that it's not so much that Metatron threw the book out, it's that Sam and Dean threw the book out. Well, this is another book that's getting thrown out, it's the Gavin thing. And is this going to be another one of those things where Sam and Dean, something messes up Sam and Dean's timeline, because they were supposed to be on these specific paths in life that season 5 told us, and, you know, everything keeps going, nope, and there's consequences to that. But on the other hand, I don't like time travel.
I wonder, because Gavin is sort of he's a great new character, and the actor who portrayed him I thought was terrific, and he seems so sweet and so fun, Theo. But Gavin himself is not the brightest bulb in the shed.
And he may not have a likable character. Yeah.
And you probably couldn't put a pigeon on him. You probably couldn't put a pigeon on him either.
No. But I will say, I'm thinking, you know, the fact that Crowley gave him the ability to read, this will give him the ability to consume printed information. And so he can learn a lot about the world. And so are we going to see him come back as some kind of formidable foe? And I say foe because I think he's going to be a problem. Is he going to try to usurp his father's throne?
I think there's all kinds of possibilities with his character now. And just even, you know, like I was saying, just the differences they can make now in the timeline. I mean, not only going back to episode 604, you can go all the way back to the beginning of the show, because, you know, this is 300 years of history that has now changed with Gavin not dying on that ship. So there could be, people from season 1 who died, like Pastor Jim. You know, maybe he's alive now. Bobby,
I'm going to translate this for anybody who's listening. What Becky's actually saying is Bobby can come back.
Yes.
There's your translation, everybody.
This is they've made a very, very plausible way to bring Bobby back without screwing up canon. So, you know.
Forget that. We now have a plausible way to have Gabriel back, and that's really my priority in life right now.
That would be cool.
An angel back, come on.
There's just so many possibilities.
I love the possibilities, but with great power comes great responsibility, and a time change is huge. So I hope they don't just go wild and crazy with the possibilities and really think them through about, you know, what they're changing and what effect it's going to have, and really make it something worthwhile, like Gabriel
or maybe Bobby. I'm on the fence about Bobby, but Gabriel I think would be awesome.
Definitely Bobby.
I know.
I think Gabriel is a
great grid choices about it. That's all. I mean, that's a big deal, and it's, you know, I don't want it to become, you know, like an easy excuse either. You know, it's like, oh, that's right, we changed time. Well, that will explain that or whatever. I want it to really mean something if they're going to use it.
The reason
I specifically say Gabriel is because not only do I like Gabriel, obviously, and we all love Richard's fate, but it would make narrative sense to have a being that manipulates reality dealing with or be the result of, come back as a result of something that changed reality. It actually makes a narrative sense to me, where, it'd be cool to have Bobby back, but at some point in there, it starts to lose its narrative sense. Same thing with Ellen, same thing with Joe, same thing with anybody that would come back. Because I'd be like, yeah, let's bring Meg back. But where's the narrative sense in it?
Well, it's a lot like the Titanic episode. By sinking the Titanic, Sam and, Ellen and Joe were still alive. You know, by saving the Titanic, they didn't die, you know, even though...
Yes, but that's one episode. This is affecting the entire universe going forward.
I know, but I'm just saying they have done this in the past, so they could do it again. You know, supernatural writers have done it on one episode, so they can do it. As we know, Jeremy Carver said when he had a 3-year storyline, and I'm hoping that this was part of his planned storyline. I'm hoping he had this in mind. This was part of his plan.
I have a slightly shallow change in history that I would like them to change somehow. And I don't even know if it's really possible in this, but I would like Dean to be able to sing so they can do that musical episode that
and Jensen actually brought that up. Somebody brought it up at the convention, and I kind of really loved Jensen's answer, where he said, you know, he brought up the whole, you know, Dean's not supposed to be able to sing, blah, 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 and then he specifically said, which I will love him forever for, he doesn't know if it can happen without Ben Edlund. I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
Correct.
To know he needs a job.
Oh, that's what, yeah, he does.
Hey, what the heck?
I didn't watch Revolution, but I still feel bad for Eric, and I feel bad for Ben. And sorry, guys.
Yeah, Revolution, not coming back. I also thought, you know, they always go, well, Dean can't sing. That's a problem. And never mind the history changing. I always thought that's very easily solved by, like, witch's curse. Or like Dancing Demon in Buffy, you know, it's like everybody had to sing. That's easily gotten around, so sorry, can't use that.
Oh, definitely.
For me.
He sort of brought up, you know, Dean can't sing, and I was thinking the same thing, you know, the whatever the demon is or whatever the curse is can easily take away your tone deafness. But I did like that it was that little nod to the fact that you need the kind of brain that Joss Whedon and Edlund, you need that kind of brain, and those kind of brains are few and far between in the world.
Yeah, and apparently Grandpa Winchester can sing really well.
Oh, guys,
can we take a moment?
I keep saying DC Con to make it easier for listeners, but the reality is this was McKinney Con, and Gil McKinney... Gil McKinney, y'all, won over the entire city of Arlington this weekend. The man. He did a panel with Audrey Chow. They'd never met before DC Con, and their panel was probably one of the best panels I've been to. He gets it in a way that he understands how we view the world of Supernatural. And so as a result, like, he has his own headcanons about Henry. He has his own headcanons about Sam and Dean and about the Men of Letters, and it's something that he, either he's put thought into or he recognizes off the cuff. That's fine, whatever, that's great. What I'm talking about is the fact that he's saying Journey, and he's saying Frank Sinatra, and then he dedicated all of me to Audrey Chow because they both said they liked the song in their panel. And then he sang it to the whole audience, and we all just kind of fell apart. And anytime he wasn't on stage, people still kept mentioning him. And anytime Jill McKinney for all the cons. I'm not even, Jill McKinney for all the things.
I hope so. He needs to be in Chicago, boy.
Like, literally, I was rooming with Britt, and we would fall asleep talking about Gil McKinney, and then we woke up talking about Gil McKinney. I'd come out of the shower talking about Gil McKinney, brush my teeth, spit and rinse, Gil McKinney. McKinney Con.
We have a couple callers, and one of them's been waiting a while, so I'm going to put them on because they've been very patient. So, area code 702, I'm about to put you on the air, and thank you for being patient. Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
Hello?
Hello? Hi.
Oh, how are you guys?
We're good.
Good, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. This is, I don't know if you guys know me, but this is actually HR Zone 2 from Twitter. You guys can just call me HR.
Yes, hi. I knew you from the Buffy board too, the Buffy figure board, where I first knew you.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'm a huge Buffy fan as well. It's cool to be talking to you guys. I just wanted to say a quick thing before I talk about a little bit of the episode. I just recently got put in my Supernatural sculptures into a scholarship at my school, and I found out today that I got it, so I was really happy about that. So I just want to tell the Supernatural family that.
Congratulations.
That's awesome.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Those are amazing. Yeah. Very,
thank
very
you.
Good.
I hope one day I can get, you know, the Jared, Jensen, and Misha, and Elena even to see them, because they're great. So I just wanted to say that about the episode with you know, how Sam and Dean, they've been arguing, you know, for a couple of episodes now. But, you know, I kind of got the idea that the fight was kind of a little bit starting to be pushed away a little bit. I'm kind of saying that because I am a brother. I have two sisters, but, you know, I'm still a brother. But it seems like they're trying to give this idea of, you know, no matter how big the fight is, they're still going to be brothers at the end of the day, kind of, you know, that kind of feeling with family members.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. I get that, yeah.
Yeah, and it just seems like, you know, with arguments that I found is that, like, you have fights and you do all these things, but, you know, like, if something really big happens, part of you isn't going to forget it. Like, you forgive, but you don't forget situation. But I just think it's been put on a grander scale with this show. It's similar with Buffy, you know, where it talks about the, you know, the pain and suffering of high school, but they used actual demons. I kind of think that's what they're going for with this argument, except for it's the mark of Cain in a way.
That's a theory. I like that theory.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's,
I'm pretty on board with that.
Yeah, I'm kind of twisting in the Whedon-verse a little bit into that, but I kind of think that's what they're doing, and
Mhm. Well, at its foundation, it's the story of two sets of brothers, Sam and Dean, Cain and Abel. I mean, that's very basic, and there's a lot more to it, but yeah, it's definitely can definitely relate brothers.
Yeah, and to comment on what you guys were saying about, you know, time travel and the effects that it has, I think there is – I kind of got that idea because, like, when they were talking about all how – what's his name? His name's Gavin, right, his son?
Uh-huh.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when he died and, you know, they brought him back, you know, for a second I thought there was a little continuity error when, you know, Sam and Dean were saying, you know, I'm just surprised that – Crowley has a son. I'm like, what, you guys saw him in, like, what was it, season 5 or 6? And then I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. He never died. So I started to think of all, like, all the things you guys were saying. I think there's a lot of possibility that they could do with that. Who knows what they will do with that, though. So.
I'm really excited about that. Really excited.
Yeah, and I mean, I have a lot of wishful thinking of, you know, possibility of characters, you know, because a lot of great characters, side characters, you know, have, you know, passed away in Supernatural that I'm still bitter about, like Bobby and such, but
it's a big club.
Yeah. I mean, it's the littlest things. Like, I'm a huge fan of Crowley, but anybody who knows me knows that I'm still bitter about Sarah Blake dying from Clip Show. Like, those little characters like that, I still, you know, hit me right here in the heart because I really like those characters and such. And like, yeah, I was sad that Abaddon died this episode, but I was really happy with the way she went out. You know, if you're going to take a character out, you know, you might take them out in a huge grand scale or have some sort of meaning. So I think that was really great.
Yeah, I agree with you there. It was, like I said, that shot where they pulled back and you could see them through the doorway. I mean, that could be a poster. It could be. I mean, I would hang that on my wall. That was just gorgeous.
And you saying that they gave her a big send off. The fact that we know how powerful she is, and to watch her and Dean have that battle of wills and power made it all the more. The impact was really huge for that. Even though it feels like such a quick moment, what's underneath it is so big.
And yeah, definitely.
I think they really did, you know, we didn't see much of Abaddon as much as I thought we would once we realized she was going to be back for season 9. But what we did get of her, I think, really did the character and Elena as an actress a lot of justice.
Mm.
Yeah, literally, you know, literally every episode with Abaddon in this season has probably been one of my favorites. Not just saying that because I'm a huge Abaddon fanboy, but I'm also saying that because it just happened to end up that way. Like, the second episode of this season, when she had that army and all that, I'm like, I like this. You know, Abaddon's a character who thinks outside the box, who doesn't care to make deals. She's kind of like the exact opposite of Crowley in a way, and that's something that I liked about her, even though her character's gone now.
I think if it wasn't for the fact that we have Crowley, and I think, for one, the writers really enjoy writing for Crowley, and, you know, having Mark Sheppard in your show is a geek gold mine in a lot of ways. I don't mean money-wise. I just mean, you know, in general, but especially to have him for as long as we've had him, like I said earlier, it was a given that we were going to lose Abaddon to Crowley in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I knew.
But, you know, I think had we not had Crowley, we probably would have had more Abaddon.
Yeah. I like you guys were saying, I had the idea that Abaddon was going to go die this episode just because, you know, it's getting towards the end of the season. There's a lot of stuff going on with the Mark of Cain and Metatron and Gadriel, and there's a lot of stuff that happened this season. So I guess they had to pick one, and they picked Abaddon. I'd rather they picked Metatron, but, you know. I with villains, there's villains that you really like you love to hate, like, or there's villains that you just, you know, they really cause a lot of trouble, almost a little too much trouble, and you're just like, okay, it's time for you to step aside for a while. I'm hoping that they'll find a really nice way to wrap up the Metatron story. And, you know, one thing, I guess, my final thought, I guess I'll talk about is, you know, with Castiel, I'm a huge fan of Castiel, and I'm really glad that he's coming back for season 10. What way he's coming back, I don't know, because I did see the alleged video of a convention that was online of him talking about something that I will not say. But I'm just glad he's coming back. But I really want to see – it was nice to see Castiel on his own in this season. I think that was interesting. But I think in season 10, if they can find a way to make it so that the storylines are more cohesive or together, that'd be nice. Because I like seeing him with Sam and Dean, basically.
Yeah, very interested to see how they're going to fit him in next year. Very, very interesting. Mm. Everything is interesting for next season.
Yeah. Yeah, and I just find it kind of weird that these angels decided to follow Castiel after all the stuff that he did in, like, season 7, you know,
right,
like he killed
exactly.
half of you guys. You know, yeah. like, a lot of people are kind of like...
I thought the same thing, but I guess the implication is that he still has that leader persona. Like, you can always... People with a leader persona or character leader persona, it's something inherent in them. And
yeah,
I'm assuming they're kind of running with that, because I do think about that too. I'm like, okay, you were the traitor, and then you were the traitor, and then again you were the traitor.
Yeah,
that's a big to decide that you're going to be to fight alongside Castiel. That's a huge gamble to take. You're probably
yeah.
on the right side, but it's a really big gamble to take.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I want to believe, like, I know that, you know, Castiel, he's learned his lessons, and I think season 8 had a lot to do with that. I think a lot of things were being brought up in season 8 with Castiel and Sam and Dean that I thought were going to be revolved, but kind of continue, like, with Sam and Dean arguing and such in this season. But with Castiel, I he's really an interesting character, and I just, I'm just curious to see where he's going, but I just don't really see him as a like a leader. Like I believed him when he was saying, you know, I'm not really ready for this. Like I can't handle this. I'm trying to fix the mistakes that I've done in the past, so I'm not really ready for this. But you know,
I kind of equate it to, though, and thankfully you'll understand this because everything comes back to Buffy for me too. So I kind of equate it to the Slayer when you have Buffy saying that she didn't ask for this and she didn't want this. This is not,
yeah.
you know, she's just a girl and Cass, like, I'm just an angel.
Yeah.
And he wasn't technically a big deal angel. So I think it's one of those things where your path and your station, it's not
yeah.
so much what you choose, it's what you are. And for me, that is what Cass is. I feel like the cohesive story to give Cass is that for him, free will means that he understands the heaven that God wanted, not the heaven that it became.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That
and
can,
I think,
yeah.
Yeah. And I just think that's kind of what, I think that's what Metatron kind of stands for, in a way that he's trying to create his own story. He's trying to, for the sake
mm-hmm.
of it, for no reason. And Castiel is pretty much saying, no, there's a reason why Castiel keeps coming back, regardless of all the fans, you know, really wanting him to be around. You know, like, he died, he keeps coming back, somehow he keeps coming back again out of the ocean. I think there's a reason for that, whether it's for him to be a leader or such, you know, I don't know, but yeah.
And the implication is, you know, every time it's he doesn't know why he's back. He just says, you know, in season 7 in Thrall, if he just says, it's always painful. And I don't think he necessarily means that physically. And,
yeah.
you know, he dies in Swan Song, and he's immediately back, and he doesn't know why. And, you know, he walks into the water, and he comes back, and he doesn't know why. And
mm-hmm.
he gets out of purgatory, and he's, I don't know why. And it's the
yeah.
implication that God keeps saying, you're going to get it right eventually, Castiel. I promise you, you just need to keep fighting and trying. You will get it right, which is
yeah,
the option that a lot of angels don't get. You know, you get one chance, and he's clearly God's favorite, and he
yeah.
keeps getting that chance to get it right. And we got that earlier in this season when he was a human, that he says he finally understands where he was making his mistakes, that it was his ego, his hubris. And I think that was a big changing point for him to realize that he has a purpose. I don't think he really ever felt he had an actual purpose, other than he would have a mission, but not a purpose.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, there's so many possibilities with his character, and I hope they do some great things with him and Sam and Dean. Obviously, they're going to be around. but yeah, that's pretty much all I wanted to say. I just wanted to call in and tell you guys, thank you. First of all, thank you for you know, retweeting my sculptures and such. I wanted to tell you guys that. And yeah, I really like your show. Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
And congratulations again.
Thank you very much. Thanks, guys. I'll see you.
Bye.
Bye.
Wow, he's very interesting to talk to. I could talk to him all night.
No, seriously. Mm-hmm. I was like, you have to go. Don't go.
Yeah.
But people see Buffy and Supernatural. Can I talk to you forever?
Right, exactly.
Yes.
That's going to be the name of my autobiography.
Who killed Ezra? Wasn't Sam and Dean?
We don't know.
And whoever he is,
no, we don't know.
She, whoever it is,
I assumed it was Metatron.
Fox in the hen house. You know, it's the wolf in sheep's clothing. To just
assumed it was either Metatron or somebody. Well, we know that next episode is going to be dealing with dissension in the ranks and traitorism and things like that. So.
Somebody, and like the reason why Castiel went to Gadriel at the end is because he knows he has a mole on his side from Metatron's side, so he wants to have a mole on one of his guys be a mole on Metatron. So he's trying to get Gadriel to be his mole for him.
Speaking of Gadriel, I love the scene with Sam explaining to Cass how he felt when he had Gadriel in him.
Yeah,
because it's not something that we knew, and it gives us a platform for how we can feel about Gadriel, because once he killed Kevin, we all kind of turned on him, rightfully so, but prior to that, we all kind of went, what's his purpose? Like, what is he doing? Like, why is he even doing this? And so to have Sam kind of confirm that nothing inside of him felt bad with Gadriel. And I thought that insight to Sam and to Gadriel through Sam's eyes was really well written.
Yeah, and he didn't want to talk about it, but Cass asked him, and it was great. You could just see it all on Jared's face as Sam. You know, it was very difficult, hard to talk about. He didn't like remembering it, but he tried for Cass and hoping it would help, I guess, for some insight on Gadriel and what's going to happen there. But yeah, I thought it was a really good scene, and it's nice to hear from Sam what's going on in his head. We haven't
hate to say this because I loved Kevin and I love Osric, but it's one of those things where Gadriel is not outside of redemption, because Sam, Dean, Castiel, they've all killed and done really horrible things that we all forgive them for. And so you kind of can't throw the key away on Gadriel, because it's at the risk of sounding simplistic, it's not fair.
Right. Yeah, and it was a Gadriel who, in a very bizarre, twisted way, thought he would be redeemed or forgiven if he worked with Metatron and could bring him back to heaven. And he thought, well, sacrifices must be made.
And for an angel, the idea of releasing a human from humanity isn't really a necessarily malicious thing. It's not that bad.
Right. Of course, everybody's in between the veil.
Yes.
We released Kevin, but he didn't go to heaven. So, yeah, that's going to be a problem. Dean is definitely feeling the Mark of Cain effects more and more. About the mark glowing through his jacket?
And what about him having these psychic powers now? He was able to draw the bat.
I posted on Twitter, YED John
float the Denby psychic boy, Sam, even though tries, can't. Dean, 8 years later, floats a knife to himself. That's a huge thing because that is basically confirming for us that the mark isn't just changing him emotionally. It's changing
physically.
For all intents and purposes, his molecular structure, for lack of a better term, which pleases me greatly.
because
if I don't get black-eyed demon Dean by the end of this season, I'm going to burn everything to the ground.
there's a little bit from Lynn at Fangasm's report from Jensen's meet and greet, and she asked him, was he basically satisfied with the way season 9 ends? And it's not that spoilery. I mean, you'd have to be a super spoiler phobe to not want to hear it, but just in case. Jensen says, well, let me say this. I got to the last script and just went, oh, wow, they went there. And that's not something I often say. So if it set Jensen back...
The only thing I will say is it's one of those funny things that I love our writers and I love our cast and crew, but the detachment that comes from being a part of it versus a fan of it, that they always think like, ooh, we've got you guys, and they do it, and it is a really cool thing, but we're like, yeah, I saw that coming. And they're like, how? We're like, because we thought about it.
Yeah.
Where they were like,
I know.
It's
a surprise to you, but not to
us.
Oh, it's like the angel tablet. It's like, dude, where are you?
So they're like, ooh, but you didn't see that coming. We're like, yeah, we did. It was cool, though, but yeah, we did. You know?
Well,
the same thing with the opening of this season where they were like, we're going to do something we never did. We all went, angel possession. Okay.
And then
angel possession it was. So it's one of those things that even though it's cool, it's really hard to put one over on an invested fandom. And we're a smart fandom. We're a really smart fandom.
Yeah.
Smart. I didn't mean that way. Other fandoms, you are very smart as well. But we're old also.
But I love about it that instead of Jensen sort of tap dancing around and going, well, you know, that's pretty interesting.
Wait,
or
so
saying, he thought it was cool. And he was he was surprised, and we may not be surprised, but if he was surprised and he thinks it's pretty amazing. Well, it's got some potential. And even if it is something that we all saw coming, if it's a super cool thing like Demon Dean or something along those lines, great, bring it on. I don't care if we all guessed it. If it's got that much potential and they're going to go there, let's
pure,
bring it on.
Pure Demon Dean or bust. Pure Demon Dean or bust.
I mean, I was telling Vinny the other day, I mean, if they do this, it goes all the way back to season 3's Dream a Little Dream when Dean was talking to himself, and at the end, this is what you'll become, Demon Dean with the black eyes. It's like, and see, that never happened. We did not get that with Dean's time in hell in season 3.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're finally going back to that and saying, see, it did happen, ha-ha, see,
well,
that we did it.
Yeah.
And
my favorite things about this is what this Mark of K line that storyline does, and just what we've seen so far. I'm not even talking about speculation, but what we've seen so far is it really harkens to a Dean that we've only seen glimpses of before, you know, this is what you'll become, and I got down off that rack and I started torturing souls and I liked it.
Yeah.
And you get, you know, you have Dean coming back from purgatory, being the thing that purgatory was afraid of, and him coming back and being like, it was pure. And you have in this last episode saying, I was calm, and it's just this chilling thing that we know about Dean, but we very easily forget about Dean. Going back to Devil's Trap when he's torturing Meg, and the look that Sam has on his face watching Dean be this horrible person. You know, yes, you're torturing a demon, but you're torturing a demon in a girl's body, and you're just chilling about it. And it's, like I said, the thing that we've seen through Dean in glimpses, the whole run of the show, but it never really gets fully explored.
And
couple things. The last conversation in the car that they have at the end, Sam and Dean, and Sam goes through this whole, you know, very well spoken, articulate, I think we shouldn't use the first blade. We should just save it for the big things. And Dean just says quietly, calmly, no.
No. I loved that.
No. And it's Sam he's saying no to. It's Sammy, you know, and it's just no.
Speaking of Sammy,
how do you fight against
very
that?
Interesting.
You know?
Yes. This is something I find very interesting. In Bloodlines, we saw this, and we see it as well in this episode, is that oddly enough, Dean keeps referring to Sam as Sammy.
Hmm.
And I find it really weird. Like, is that, why are we doing that? Why? I dig it. Like, I'm not even going to pretend I don't. But why?
Hmm.
And he's doing it in this very conversational way at a time when calling him Sammy is really bizarre.
I don't know. I mean, I like it, but you're right. It's puzzling.
I think in three episodes, he's done it four times, if my count is right.
Another thing, because I don't want to forget, but going back to Dean and Dean, we know we also have a procedure if we don't want Dean to stay a demon. We can turn a demon back into a human. And
that's
it's already.
That's one of the things I didn't want to say. That's what I was saying. Like, season 8 is important in a way that we didn't realize. Because I remember us doing the podcast and saying, well, what's the point of closing the gates of hell? So you get rid of demons. You still have ghouls and vampires and werewolves and shapeshifters. You didn't change. You still have to do your job. Why are you telling me that you're going to retire? You still have a job to do. And
yeah.
Especially in that time frame when angels have been the biggest problem for the past few years, that's great. You close the gates of hell, you still have angels. And so the trials are just going to be a blueprint for Sam to be able to, in my opinion, go get Dean from hell, which is why Taxi Driver was important, and cure a demon. Because if you cure Dean, the demon... Our biggest problem when we discuss that episode is you're curing the demon at the expense of the human soul. You know, what happened there? But Dean being a pure demon, he's the only thing in there. So you revert back to Dean.
Yeah, and it's a chance for Sam to save Dean. You know, let me do
this
one thing right.
Well, that's the most important thing. Yeah, it's the most important thing. It goes back to sacrifice with Sam's biggest sin and what he's unable to do. And again, like Becky and I have talked about as well, you're going back to season 3 with that then. And the fact that the one thing Sam's never been able to do, and you go back to sacrifice and you're saying, you've got Sam saying, you know, who are you going to turn to? An angel? A vampire? Well, these are the beings that have pulled Dean out of the stickiest of situations as far as Sam is concerned. And this is the one thing Sam could never do, no matter how hard he tried. And he did try. You know, nobody would take his soul. And he became a monster to avenge the fact that he couldn't save Dean. It's all been for naught. It's all been for naught, and this is finally Sam's redemption arc.
Yeah, and he says, "I made the wrong choice every time."
Mm-hmm.
Well, yes,
his wrong choice has always been. Because I do think, to a degree, that Sam takes Dean for granted in a way. And I don't mean that in a mean way. I mean, it's the same way that you kind of just take your parents for granted because they're your parents, and duh, they love you, and duh, they're going to be there for you. And that one moment when they're like, yeah, I can't do that, or I'm not going to do that, you're like, wait, but I don't understand. Because you've always done it, and you've always been there. What do you mean? And so I do think that we're finally going to get a soulless, demonic version of Dean walking away from Sam. And I do think he's going to do it for his own good, because it's like he did in this episode where he sent Sam away
to keep mm-hmm. Sam safe. And I think, you know, it's more to keep him safe from himself, I believe.
I disagree with that. I don't.
Well, you're wrong, and that's fine.
I don't think he sent Sam away to keep him safe. Like you said, it was because Abaddon could grab him and try to use him, bargain with him. I think he did it because he knew Sam would not like what he was going to do.
And try to stop him.
Exactly.
Yeah, that as well.
If he is the soulless demon Dean at the end, and I don't think he's turning into it for the good of Sam. I think he's turning into it because of the way the blade has affected him. I don't think Sam will have anything to do with it.
No, but I think that the he's going to have to give a reason, though, and his reason isn't going to be the blade. I think he's going to tell Sam, like, you know what, this is who I am, and goodbye.
Exactly. That's how I feel. Exactly.
I don't think he's going to say, you know what, the blade is making me like this. Goodbye.
Oh, no, that's going to be the reason why, but he's not going to admit that.
I don't even know if he'll understand that.
Exactly. He may not know that that's why he's doing the thing he's doing or why he's feeling the way he's feeling, but that is the reason why. And he's just going to think this is the right way to be. Whereas I do believe when Sam was addicted to the demon blood, he knew what he was doing because he kept making the excuses. And I think Sam knew, whereas versus Dean does not know.
Don't underestimate Dean, though.
I'm not underestimating him. I'm just saying I don't think. Because if Dean was in his right head, there's no way at all he would go all killy.
But Dean
hasn't
been in his right head since the beginning of this season. Dean hasn't been in his right head since he was 4 years old. Let's be real.
Very true. But Dean's always been. He wants to go kill evil things, and he wants to go kill zombies, and you know, but he's never been one who's, and the only other time we really saw him being like overkilly was when after Dawn died, mm-hmm. and you know, when he met up with Gordon and he had fun killing that vampire, you know, and all that, and so the only time we really see him being overkilly is when he's in an extreme emotional state.
Yes.
That's one thing.
The catalyst for him even taking on the mark was his belief that he's no good.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
This is something
already festering inside of Dean.
And which is causing the extreme emotional state that
mm-hmm.
makes him overkilly. If he wasn't in this headspace, if he wasn't in the I'm poisoned type of place, he wouldn't be doing this.
I just want demonized. I want to demonize.
I do too. I do too.
Dean kills Abaddon and then keeps killing her. Just stabs her over and over and over again. And I like that it's Sam, again, is the one who can call him out of it and get him back to reality.
Mm-hmm. And I think at some point that's going to be an issue for Dean where he's going to be like, stop pulling me out of this.
Yeah. And hopefully it's a little sign for the future that it will be Sam that can reach Dean when no one else can and save him.
I mean, narratively, there's no other way for that to go.
I sure hope so.
I can't think how they would do it any other way as far as the narrative goes.
They've taken it away from Sam so many times. Surely,
mm-hmm.
they will not do it again.
I hope so. I really, really do.
Yeah.
I
can't see any other way.
That's
the direction I think they're headed in. Yeah, with the setup they're giving,
And I, like I said, I just can't. I literally have no other. I don't know what else they could do. I can't even
unless,
think of anything else.
Yeah. Unless their goal is really to just marry Sam, write him off as the, as a sucky character who cannot save his brother no matter what.
Like Jensen said, if this was the last season, he'd be worried. But it's not. So he's not worried. They both felt very secure saying that they completely thought that the brothers would be brothers again, all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go ahead and trust them because they have all the spoilers right now.
Yep, they must have. They must know what they're talking about.
They have that over me.
And I would hope that Angel interference to save Dean has been there, done that. So it will not be part of this. That it is purely Sam and Dean and the Mark of Cain.
So exactly. Just think of the Mark of Cain story. It's a brother's story.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, and given Misha spoiler for the end of the season, he's going to be in no position to be assisting with anything.
Okay.
He's got his own issue to deal with, and they're not small.
We have a caller, again, a very patient caller who's been waiting a while. If they're still there, area code 662, I'm going to put you on the air.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. I was just going to say, going back to not this week's episode, but last week's episode, Bloodlines, I know that I'm probably the only person that feels this way, but I'm kind of sad that the show didn't get picked up because I kind of liked it. But that was just me. Everybody was, being really negative about it, but I'm not, I don't know much about the show, even though I'm a fan and have been a fan since season one. I don't know all the terminology and everything that everybody knows. So when everybody was pulling it apart, I could see it. But I was just looking at it as the show, and I kind of liked it. So I was kind of sad to see it go, but I understand.
You're not the only one. I've seen a lot of people. No, I've seen a notable number of people be like, well, I'm kind of bummed. And I think that I do think that it could have worked in a different context.
Yeah, I mean, I felt it kind of, it was really, I understand, it's a 40-minute show. There's only so much you can put into a backdoor pilot, which I actually understood all that, so yay me. But I was just like, man, I saw so much potential. I think one of y'all have said on many occasions that the show had room for potential. It was a little weak on some areas, but going back to this past week's episode with the death of Abaddon, I think it's going that death is going to be one of those iconic deaths, maybe, I guess you could say, that would be associated with Supernatural because it was done in such a beautiful way. He literally lit her up the 4th of July. It was just really beautiful. I loved it, and I was
This is going to be one of those for the show history. It's going to be one of those.
To me, it's going to be one of those, you think back, Mary's death and, all those deaths, that's oh, wow, kind of neat. But I did have, two small questions, if that's okay. One was, do y'all think that Crowley, now that his son is back in action and, with him being downsized with the human blood and everything, he has human emotions because we saw him stop Abaddon from, continuing to torture Evan. So do you think now Carly has a weakness?
I think he, well, we saw that he was a weakness in this because he made Abaddon stop, you know, torturing him. But if he truly cared about him like a father does, he wouldn't just leave him in some random field.
Okay, but if he didn't care, if he didn't care, he wouldn't have saved him from going back in time and dying.
Exactly.
I think it,
he
I think it, it is.
Set him back.
I think with Crowley, it's that his emotions are a weird thing. I think for most higher-level demons, we've seen that they have the capacity to emote in a very human way, but it's a twisted way. And I think for Crowley, it's kind of a he cares to a degree, and he's probably really annoyed that he cares to any degree.
Mm. Yeah, I agree on that. And the thing is, he is still a demon. He's a demon, but he has these human feelings. That's why he would not let Sam and Dean take him back to the past where Gavin would die. He wanted Gavin to stay so he has a chance, yet he's still a demon, so he just dropped him off in some random field.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure, like, as far as he's concerned, it's not as big of a dick move as we think it is.
Yeah. I just thought it was maybe now that the boys have a reason, like, they have something that, okay, they can always go find him and use him against Crowley for future references, maybe. But
yeah.
We don't know, so, I mean, and he liked the idea of being the Prince of Hell, too. So, mm-hmm. as y'all pointed out earlier, he may try to take his rightful place at his father's side mm-hmm. later on.
That's my concern. Not concern, that's my one thing I thought about.
I was like, wow, okay. So there's two different ways you can play there. So the writers are going to have fun with that. And the other thing was with Sam, you remember when Crowley had to be able to possess him, they had to burn his mark off, so is he still able and free to freely to be possessed?
That's a question. We've been thinking about, has Sam gotten that tattoo back or not? You know, we this is a good reason for us to get a shirtless scene. We really need the shirtless scene so we can see.
You know what?
The tattoo.
I don't know if they were joking, but no, they were talking about Crowley having a shirtless scene. Never mind. Moving on.
I wouldn't disagree for that either. I mean, I love Mark Shepard. I think he's a sexy beast.
Yeah, I agree with you.
But I also see Sam as with the latter part of y'all's conversation, as I do believe they're leading Sam to be Dean's saving grace or his redemption, because Dean's never saw worth of himself through his eyes, but he's always seen it, like, through other people's eyes, like through John's and through Sam's and through Bobby's and probably even through Cass's. That's why he takes, you know, their deaths hard. Not only do they love him, but in a way that, to me, that's where he sees his validation, through them. And so maybe through Sam, he can finally be whole again, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I've overanalyzed those two boys so much. It's not even funny because I was a psychology major and I used them as part of my final paper.
Well, you're in the right fandom then. You're perfect.
So true.
Okay. Well, thank y'all. I just recently started listening to the podcast. I didn't even know any of this existed, the podcast, the conventions, any of it. I'm, like, new to all of it, although I've watched the show for years. So it's fun getting other people's opinions. So thank y'all for letting me listen in and sharing my opinions.
Oh,
great.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you so much.
All right, y'all have a great weekend.
You too.
All right,
bye. We have the best listeners. I'm telling you, we just have the best listeners.
We really do.
We do. Yeah, they have such good thoughts and opinions. And
it just pretty much reiterates what the cast and crew always say, is that Supernatural has the best fans, because anyone who's listening to us is a fan of the show. If you're not a fan of the show, I'm very confused as to what you're listening to. And you're probably confused about what you're listening to. And yeah, you're going to demons? I don't understand.
Yeah.
On the wrong
side.
Yeah, and that's, you know, she said that she overanalyzes, but, you know, that's what unites all of us in the end, is that we all really think about this show a lot. And, you know,
yeah, we do, and that's the sign of a great show, and acting and writing. And it's kind of funny because, you know, what we think about and analyze is sometimes not what they think we're going to think about or analyze. And again, it's like poor Adam stuck in the cage, and they don't think about him at all. But we're still like, but Adam.
Oh, real quick, we're about to go off. Off being live, and I have to go anyway. But I was talking to my friend Katie, and she had this complete rationale about Adam that I never really thought about. And so she was like, "She's like, no, why would Adam come back? Adam's fine." And I was like, "What do you mean?" She's like, "When when they ask Michael to try to get through to Adam." He says Adam isn't home right now. He's like, so as far as I'm concerned, Michael killed Adam internally, and Adam's been in heaven this whole time. I don't know what everybody keeps complaining about. So there you go, Becky. Adam's fine. He's in heaven. There's no worries. Everything is fine.
I wish I could believe that. I don't, but I wish that would be really. If they actually do ever finally give Adam some closure, and that's how they do it, I would be very happy with it. But until then, until I get proof,
and he's
I need
dead.
Closure. I need Adam closure.
Well, maybe with Gavin changing history, something will happen about Adam.
Adam's still alive, maybe.
Maybe.
No. But I'll take that back. I don't want Adam still alive. I want him in hell, because otherwise that means the things that happened in Swan Song didn't happen, and I love Swan Song. So
I do, too. It was on today.
I know. I saw everybody speaking about it, and I'm like, I'm at a doctor's appointment. I can't be watching. I'm so upset.
I watched like literally the first 2 minutes, and it was, you know, it was Carry On Wayward Son, which, you know, is always killer anyway. And then Rob starts his voiceover about the Impala, and I was just a mess. I watched for 2 minutes and was a mess. I was like, I've got to go to work. And
over the years, I have come to appreciate that episode more than I did. So there's that.
Yes, there is that. That is a good thing.
It has melted my heart.
Okay. Anything else about this episode?
Swan Song is my favorite episode. That's all I want to say.
All hell breaks loose, one and two.
Swan Song, Born Under a Bad Sign.
No Rest for the Wicked.
So many good ones.
What?
So many good episodes.
Oh, that was something else that I thought was kind of cool, real quick. Misha did talk about how, like, when he was, because we're all mentioning fairly older episodes, but he talked about, like, you know, directing his episode and everything, and he said that he went around and he asked the cast and crew what episodes they liked, what were their favorite episodes, and he two that he named was Appointment in Samara and Dead in the Water, of course, Dead in the Water. But so he said that as a result, he went back and watched a lot of older episodes. excuse me, I thought that was really, really interesting.
Yeah. also In My Time of Dying.
Oh, great. Great episode.
Spectacular.
Oh, really good one.
Yeah. Anything about else about this episode? Any news or anything else we need to report or speak about? Two more apps?
Can't think of anything. I do want to mention that our podcast next week for the episode Stairway to Heaven is directed by Guy B, and our good friend Guy B will be back on our podcast. Peace only.
Yay.
There's only been one episode, well, two. We weren't podcasting in season one when he directed Asylum, so he didn't. Mm-hmm. He was, you know, so there's no way for him to be do a podcast then. And then there was a podcast in season seven that Vinny and I were in Vancouver when his episode aired, so we weren't able to do a podcast for that one. So out of all of Guy B's episodes, he's only missed two. We love Guy.
Yeah. Looking forward to that. He always has so many good stories and insights and everything about his app. It's always great. And then one more after that, and then Helatus, where we found. I wonder if they'll premiere in October again, like they did last year, which makes it even more hell, even longer.
But
at least the
DVDs come out in September.
Yeah, and next year we won't have the Olympics to contend with, so that won't mess up the flow. So there's that.
True.
I think that's a wrap. King of the Damned.
That's a wrap. All right. Great job. Thanks
great
for all the
great episode by Buckner Lemming. Told you so. I informed you thusly.
And so thusly, I will have to rewatch and see for myself.
And if anybody does do the bubble rewatch, I've been calling it the bubble rewatch. So if you do watch the Buckner Lemming episodes from 719 to now, take out Manifest from the Benefits, not because of that episode, because I don't actually have an issue with that episode, but because it's not necessary for the point of it. But if you do, tweet us and let me know, because I'm super invested in this. And come talk to me about it at Winchester Bros. I just want to talk about it. So if you do it, let me know.
Okay. There's your homework.
Yes, fandom, you have homework. Go forth and work on your home.
So thanks, everybody, for listening. Tune in next week when we'll have Guy B on the show.
Yep. Thanks, everybody.
Good night, everyone.